Assyrian troops cut supply lines for foreign-backed insurgents and retake all but one town in the western region bordering Lebanon. Militants look set to meet another setback ahead of a peace conference in Geneva. The rise in the number of extremist groups and the recent bloody infighting has led to differences among foreign states supporting the insurgency. Among them, Saudi Arabia is seen as the strongest supporter, prepared to go to the extremes to guarantee victory. With US President Barack Obama being blamed for manipulating intelligence against the Syrian government over a chemical attack in August, it looks like the equations of the Syrian war are rapidly changing. This is The Debate.
The Syrian army turning the tide of war. Syrian government forces are securing battleground successes one after another. The sides are now on the last insurgent stronghold in the mountainous Kalamun region, and a strategic area in the west near the border with Lebanon. On Monday, Syrian forces took full control of the town of Nabk that lies along the strategic Damascus-Homs highway, a major road that links Syria's north to the south. Nabk, which is located in the north of the capital Damascus, fell to Syrian armed forces after 2 weeks of fierce fighting and siege. Boosted by the gain, Syria's advancing army is now moving southward to the town of Yarmouk, the last stronghold of the insurgents in the key western region. If the army wrests Yarmouk's control from the insurgents, it can cut the supply routes that run across the border with Lebanon. The town's also significant because it's believed to be where a group of nuns from the historic Christian village of Merloula have been transferred. They're being held by the insurgents who've admitted their allegiance to the terrorist group Al-Qaeda. By reopening the highway, everyday life in Damascus could come back to normal with the flow of Homs refinery fuel to the city to resume. That would also end the power cuts there. Also, Syria's chemical weapons can now be safely transferred to the Latakia and Tartus ports in order to be shipped for the final destruction aboard or at the sea. The Syrian army's advances are further driving the insurgents, both those who enjoy the support of Western governments and those with links to Al-Qaeda, who are backed by some US allies, to the corner and isolation. They're not now, as experts argue, in a capacity to challenge President Bashar al-Assad's hold on power or carry out more terrorist attacks. What's more, Assad can now attend the proposed Geneva II conference with fresh confidence and with more options.
You're watching The Debate. Joining us now live from Madison is author and Middle East expert Mr. Kevin Barrett. Also with us live from Washington with the Center for American Progress, Mr. Lawrence J. Korb. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for being on this edition of The Debate. I'll put my first question to Mr. Korb in Washington. Mr. Korb, Syrian troops have been making advances. They've just got Yarmouk, it seems, to seize in the west in order to close the Lebanon border to militants. How have these advancements, do you think, affected the Syrian government's position?
Well, I think what it will do is, if we have, and I hope we do have, the negotiations to stop this bloodshed, it will give them, more bargaining room in the negotiations as to whether Assad can stay, how long he can stay, how will you divide up the country and divide up its resources.
So you're saying that this means in Geneva II, the Syrian president is going to have more bargaining room. Let's just bring in our guest in Madison, Mr. Barrett, on this as well. Kevin Barrett, some are already saying that the gains that have been made by the Syrian government have, I'll quote here one writer, shattered the political and military front of the foreign-backed opposition. And some are saying that the Syrian insurgency is even seeing its final days. Would you go as far as saying that?
Well, I hope so. I think that the other guest is correct in saying that we may be getting a peaceful and negotiated end to this horrible conflict, but I think he's wrong in calling for Syria to be and its resources to be divided up. That's, of course, what the Zionists want, and they're the ones who are behind the destabilization of Syria in the first place. What's actually happened is that the rebels played their trump card in August with a false flag chemical weapons event in Al Ruta, that was intended to be blamed on the Assad government. The problem was that, as in the case of many false flag events, they didn't do a very good job of pinning the blame on the intended patsy. And we just got a report from Seymour Hersh, the dean of American investigative journalism, that explained that the Obama administration apparently harbors some agents of these forces that are trying to destabilize Syria. And those people were pushing Obama to use the false flag event in Al-Ghouta to bomb Syria. And there were other forces in the US administration, especially the intelligence community, who said, no way, this chemical weapons event looks like it came from the rebels, not from the Syrian government. And according to Seymour Hersh, that was the probable reason that the Obama administration decided not to bomb Syria. And since then, everything has been going against the Saudi-Israeli so-called rebels in Syria and in favor of the people who are trying to get a peaceful settlement that will maintain Syria as a strong, united country.
Mr. Korb, do you think that the Obama administration did act wrongly in that case, according to Mr. Hersh's report, and is now paying the consequences? He said in that report that Obama omitted important intelligence and presented assumptions as facts, effectively lying, that he cherry-picked intelligence to justify a strike against Assad.
Well, first of all, there was no strike against Assad. The Congress had access to all of the intelligence, and they made a decision, and the president respected the decision. The president was concerned, as he said, about chemical weapons, and as in the run-up to this, you talked about the fact that the chemical weapons are out of the country now, which will make everybody safer. And it's important to keep in mind here that this quote-unquote rebellion started as peaceful demonstrations against the government for the actions they were taking. They were the first ones to use force, and then the countries in the region, particularly the Saudis, not the Israelis. The Israelis were very happy with Assad in power. They were getting along very, very well with them. In fact, the Turks were brokering talks between the Assad regime and Israel. So the fact of the matter is, the president didn't attack them, whether, and again, Cy Hersh, sometimes he gets it right, sometimes he gets it wrong. We'll just have to see there when, you know, the history of this is completely written.
So you're saying that the Obama administration was correct and was right when it said that the Syrian government has used sarin gas in that August attack and militants are not responsible for it. Do you go with that version then?
Well, I think, again, if in fact the Syrian government had nothing to do with that, why then did they turn over all their chemical weapons? And their great patron, the Russians, also, you know, basically told them to turn over the chemical weapons. So if in fact they had nothing to do with it, and this was not the first time, there were other incidents before, which the United Nations, and again, if you read the UN report, which I've done, I don't have obviously access to all the American intelligence, but if you read the UN report there, it's pretty clear it wasn't the rebels, it was the government based upon where they were and when they were fired.
Well, we do know, of course, that the UN report wasn't about who was behind this. It was about giving evidence that sarin gas was actually used. But let's put this case to Mr. Barrett now. Kevin Barrett, I guess he was saying that the Syrian government, if it wasn't involved, why then did it agree to have its chemical weapons arsenal destroyed?
Well, because the Syrian government has been behaving relatively reasonably, at least since the early stage of the conflict. I do think the other guest is correct. The Syrian government did make some serious mistakes at the very beginning of this crisis when it was still mostly peaceful demonstrations, allowing these foreign forces led by, yes, the Israelis and their close allies, the Saudis, to destabilize Syria. But the fact is that the Assad government since then has been the party that's willing to negotiate, and the Russians have been and the Iranians have been backing that position. The Western powers, led by the Saudis and Israelis, unfortunately, have not been behaving reasonably. So what happened was in August, this Al-Ghouta false flag was set up to, it was a trigger, a war trigger event designed to launch a large-scale U.S. bombing attack on Syria. That was the purpose of it, and it was conducted by the forces of Bandar Bush, the head of Saudi intelligence. And we know that now. We knew that then. It was obvious at the time that there would be no reason for Assad to launch this militarily useless alleged chemical attack on these people at the exact moment that the UN chemical weapons inspectors arrived. So the entire alternative media got this right. If you were reading Veterans Today, if you were listening to Press TV, you knew this back in August. And now anybody who reads Seymour Hersh knows it by reading the New York Times. So Seymour Hersh is about almost 6 months behind the alternative media in getting the story right. And it looks like Mr. Korb is at least 6 months behind Seymour Hersh.
Well, on the issue of the Syrian government willing to negotiate and the Geneva conference, Mr. Korb, the Syrian government has been itself saying that it's ready to negotiate, but it wants the Syrian people to decide the future of the country. It looks like what's being seen now as the setback for these talks is the opposition's disunity, the fact that they haven't yet decided if they're going to take part, how they're going to take part. And a lot of people are blaming Saudi Arabia for this. Others are blaming Israel. What do you say?
Well, again, let me point out the Israelis basically were getting along fine with Assad. They do not like any of this instability. So there's no doubt about the fact that the Saudis are helping the rebels. There's no doubt about the fact that as this conflict has gone on longer and the Assad regime has become more and more brutal, that groups, very extreme groups. No, yes. They don't, okay? Basically, they haven't. They did not want support regime change, if you will, in Egypt. They like the stable situation was fine with them. As I mentioned earlier, Turkey was brokering talks between Syria.
They sponsored
and,
the coup d'état
and Israel
in Egypt,
before
sir.
All this stuff started here. They did not sponsor the coup d'état. They were getting along fine with Mubarak. Okay, they would prefer Mubarak would still be there. Okay, and in fact, they're getting along much better now with the military than they did with Morsi. So,
they own the military.
Basically, but they still wanted Mubarak.
El-Sisi is an Israeli stooge.
They didn't want to see any change.
Well, Mr.
They didn't, that was instability.
Well, he was even more of an Israeli stooge.
Okay, just like they wanted to keep Assad there. And by the way, I don't interrupt you. Let me speak, and then you'll get your turn, okay? I don't interrupt you. Okay, now, going back to the peace talks, okay, basically, if Assad says, let the Syrian people decide in a free and fair vote, he's out, okay? I guarantee you that. He will not allow a free and fair vote. So that if that's what he means, fine, let's have it.
Mr. Kevin Barrett, go ahead.
Well, the polls conducted by Al Jazeera, based in Qatar, which is where a big chunk of the Syrian rebels are getting their support, showed back in the stage of the conflict when Assad was at his lowest ebb of popularity that he was still supported by 55% of the Syrian people. That was an Al Jazeera poll coming out of Qatar. Today, the numbers would probably be vastly even more in favor of President Assad. So I think that this notion that he wouldn't win an election in Syria is deeply questionable. That's one of the problems with the propaganda coming from both sides in this crisis, is that both sides seem to imagine that everyone shares their point of view. And that's true to some extent from the supporters of Assad, but I think it's been even more extreme from his opponents. And the fact is that the majority of the people in Syria prefer Assad to the kind of chaos and the destruction of their country that is the alternative if these so-called rebels, especially the leading al-Qaeda-linked rebels, take over Syria. And the world is coming around to that opinion as well. So I think what we may see is a peace accord that will allow for internationally monitored elections, which I think Assad will likely run in and very possibly win.
Well, Mr. Korb, if we do conclude that Bashar al-Assad is not going to win national elections in Damascus and he is eventually going to go, if The decision is left to the Syrian people. Why would countries like Saudi Arabia be pushing so hard for the military option and saying or suggesting in various reports that they're going to arm the militants to the teeth if they have to force Assad down?
Well, I think, again, if you go back and you take a look, and even the other guests admitted, Assad was terribly cruel in the beginning. And he has never had a free, fair, and open election, all right? He cracked down on the people who were mainly Sunnis. That's why the Saudis were supporting them, because of their religious feeling about it. That's why they got involved. If he had, when those demonstrations had occurred, if he had done what the Egyptians did and had an election, I can guarantee you he would be out. He's been in there, he and his father, all this time. They've never had a free, fair, and open election. All right, tell him to lay down his arms, let's have an election, and let's see what happens. But because he's been so horrible, basically you've seen these extremists come in and take over because the more moderate opposition wasn't resorting to the same horrible tactics that he was, and other countries have gotten involved. The Russians, the Iranians, Hezbollah has gotten involved on the other side, so they felt that they had to balance it.
Mr. Barrett, we know Israel has recently said that if it finds out that Syria is arming Hezbollah, it's going to get involved. This is a report that we're seeing in the news today. Do you think that there is an interest on the Israeli side as well as Saudi Arabia to get involved militarily? We know there have been reports that Israel has already been helping the militants, but do you think we're going to see an extended role by Saudi Arabia and Israel if they have to?
Well, that's possible. Israel has bombed Syria many times during this conflict, always in support of the rebels and against the Assad government. Israel has been trying to find a way to stop the rise of Hezbollah, especially since the 2006 war, which Hezbollah essentially won. Israel launched a campaign to try to defeat Hezbollah, and in fact, they were defeated. So since then, Israel has been putting all of its chips in this effort to defeat the so-called axis of resistance, that is Iran, Syria, and Hezbollah in Lebanon. And that's one of the reasons I believe that Israel worked with Saudi Arabia in this effort to destabilize Syria, which I think was planned from, you know, I think these demonstrations were not entirely spontaneous. They were set off. A lot of money was applied to this, and once the demonstrations were set off and the Assad government overreacted, then the pre-planned destabilization campaign funded by billions of dollars coming from Saudi Arabia and directed in part from Israel targeted Syria and started ripping it apart. And so as peace starts to break out, the Israelis are panicking. They're panicking over this nuclear pact with Iran, and they're panicking over the success of the Assad government in Syria. And since the Israelis, more than any other country in the world, love chaos and instability, contrary to what the other guests said, one might expect them to find ways of touching off more chaos and instability by intervening much more strongly in Syria and maybe even trying to start another war in Lebanon.
Well, Mr. Korb, I'll first refer to a report or a study conducted by a British defense consultant group. And in that report, we're hearing some 100,000 militants affiliated with 1,000 groups are fighting against the Syrian government. And that report says that most of these armed groups are affiliated with extremist groups like Al-Qaeda. Do you think that this fact, that the extremists are part of this insurgency, is actually the majority of the militants now? This is creating differences of opinion among the militants, Western supporters, and they are now thinking about, reducing the amount of political or military support that they're giving to these militants and vying for a political solution.
Well, there's no doubt about the fact that one of the reasons the United States has not provided as much aid as many people in the world think they should is because they didn't want it to go to the militants. And whatever non-lethal aid they give, they screen to make sure it doesn't go to these militant groups. There's no doubt about the fact that when Assad got help from Russia, Iran and Hezbollah, then these groups, which were moderate to begin with, began to allow these extremists to come in so they wouldn't be crushed by all of this outside help. And this idea that these demonstrations were planned, nonsense. They started in Tunisia. They went to Egypt. It was called the Arab Spring. That's what led to it. It had nothing to do with outside influence. And from the United States point of view, they prefer stability too, and the Israelis did. And that war in 2006, go to Lebanon and see what happened after Hezbollah started that against Israel. See the damage that was caused to them and their court. They didn't win the war. Okay, and they started it for no apparent reason. They just decided that they would show that they were, becoming more and more powerful.
Yes. We are quickly running out of time. The concluding remarks to Mr. Barrett now, quickly, if you can. Would you agree that this insurgency was moderate to begin with, but then when they saw, as I guess they were suggesting, that the Syrian government is getting support, then the extremists stepped in and things got out of control?
No, I don't agree with that interpretation at all. I do agree that the Arab Spring was not 100% manufactured. It was, however, hijacked. It was hijacked in Bahrain when these powers that be, the Saudis, the Israelis, and a certain segment of the Americans, decided to use the Arab Spring to attack their enemies. And they're the ones who directed the Arab Spring into Libya and immediately turned it into a war. Then they directed the so-called Arab Spring into Syria and turned it into a war. They destroyed the Arab Spring. The Arab Spring is dead, thanks to the U.S., the Israelis, and Saudi Arabia, who turned it into a way of destabilizing countries they don't like through military means and murdering hundreds of thousands of people. And they also murdered democracy in Egypt. We need a real Arab Spring. We need a real democracy movement across the region.
In Madison, author and Middle East expert Mr. Kevin Barrett speaking there. Thank you very much. A big thank you to our guest in Washington with the Center for American Progress, Mr. Lawrence J. Korb. Thank you, gentlemen, for being with us. That brings us to the end of this edition of The Debate. From me, Homa Lesky, until our next program, it's goodbye.